All right, we got a lot to do. Let's get the show on the road. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. It is the 6th of September. That is Friday, and we welcome you to the program. We have a lot to talk about. We have a lot of wonderful minds in this room, so we'll get to all of them. Governor Cuomo is coming up with Alan beginning at 10 o'clock this morning, so we have that to look forward to as well. And we have to get a lot of topics in an hour, so we're going to do that.
Grab your Sharpies.
That's really? You're going to start off on that note.
Such a cheap shot.
Hey, guess what? We have something to celebrate, not just that we're all together. Alan is here, WAMC's Alan Chartok, celebrating with his dear wife their 49th wedding anniversary.
Wow. That's amazing, isn't it?
49 years.
That's amazing. That's a serious sentence for her.
And by the way, David Torres, you are so right. I mean, you know, she's the loser in all of this. There's no question.
WAMC founder, our president, a regular panelist and a columnist. Where's the column now, Alan?
It's going to be in the Berkshire Edge. We're moving it over to the Berkshire Edge. It'll be there every Saturday, which is the same day it was in the other paper. And that'll be a lot of fun. It's online. You just go to theedge.com.
Theberkshireedge.com.
Yeah.
Theberkshireedge.com.
Is that what it is?
That is what it is.
You know better than
I looked it up. That's all right. Theberkshireedge.com. Excellent. Good morning and congratulations to both you and Roselle. Love to you both and congratulations on a wonderful, we'll continue to be a much
half
longer run.
Half century.
Amazing, isn't it? It's amazing.
The voice you hear now is that of investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good
How
morning.
Are you?
Very good.
Wonderful to and see you.
Is she a fan of love? Are you a fan of love?
No, I don't believe in hearts.
Wow, I don't find that her. Shocking.
Do you?
Yes, you seem such a Hallmark. Yes, yes. I see you in Hallmark with all the cards and the candles in your hand ready to go. You've brought a friend, very, very cool friend.
So she has a friend.
Yes, Susie Schultz is with us. She is the executive director of the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, Illinois, a longtime investigative reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, and a wonderful journalist, and we are thrilled to have Susie with us.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Well, very nice to have you on the program. Thank you. And Aaron Pasitti is with us. There's a jobs report out, so by contract, Aaron is here. Siena College.
Sookie.
Economics.
People don't
professor.
Want me here. I'm just contractually obligated to be here on Fridays.
No, we want you here.
We love you.
Aaron.
Inverted yield curves.
Good morning.
He really
Good
did morning. Nail that, didn't he? Yeah. That was like poetry.
We need a funk bass line to go
That's
with that.
That's right.
And Albany County District Attorney David Soares is with us. Good morning, David.
Good morning. And I am a big fan of love, and congratulations, Alan, to you and your wife.
Oh, blah, blah.
You're being booed. Your love is being booed.
Wow.
And that's why we love Rosemary. We do.
All right. So I mentioned the report. The U.S. Oh, I'm Judith. Have I forgotten somebody every day this week?
You're losing it.
No, you know what it is.
Too many people.
Yeah, a lot of people. We used to have like four people on the show. Now we got 107.
I can leave.
No, I'm so sorry, Judith.
It's okay, Joe.
I'm so sorry.
Joe.
Senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator, and our dear friend, who's all about the love, Judith Eng. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. And one quick thing, which is why I wanted to be introduced. Congrats to the city of Troy. Last night they passed the Plastic Free Hudson River Act unanimously that bans polystyrene, plastic straws only upon request, and a 5-cent fee on paper bags to complement the state ban on plastic bags. So it was hard fought. The chemical industry lobbyists flew in from Washington, D.C., and I give Councilmember David Besemper and the main sponsor and the other council members a lot of credit for standing up for Troy.
Judith, I wanted to ask you about something that Elizabeth Warren has been talking about on the campaign. I'm sure you've heard it, that the oil and fossil fuel industry is delighted to hear us talking about things like straws and light bulbs, because 70% of the problem is with global warming is actually their doings, not ours.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren is right. You and I using electricity and an occasional piece of plastic is not why we've got climate change. It's systemic. And I think her message is pretty sophisticated, and we've got to kind of unravel it for people. But I liked when she said to Chris Cuomo, when he was asking her about, you know, cheeseburgers and straws, she said something like, "You're kidding me."
Yeah.
So we're going to have to explain that better. We need systemic change, you know, moving away from fossil fuels. And I think the fossil fuel industry purposely is pushing it back on, oh, you're bad because you eat a cheeseburger.
But it's done that for decades. It's not anything new. It's continued to say, basically, this is your responsibility and you can clean up. You know, if you clean up the highways all the way along the way, we've been told, if only we pick up after ourselves, we'll save the planet, which is just totally, totally obfuscating their responsibility.
Right.
I'll ride my bike every day. You just don't take a cheeseburger away from me. You know what I'm saying? I think I speak for America.
Yeah.
You have the cheeseburger at the end, and you'd ride like 8 miles to get to the cheeseburger.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the way that goes.
You know, Judith, there are a lot of us who go to the co-op in Great Barrington, which is a wonderful, wonderful place. But you go and you get a lot of stuff in little plastic containers.
Right.
What's the alternative to even good places like the co-op giving you plastic?
Well, what I love about co-ops is you can often bring your own reusable jars and fill it up again over and over again.
Yeah,
then if you don't remember or you can't bring reusables, quite honestly, you know, paper's not great, but it's a lot better than plastic. Plastic is made from chemicals and fossil fuels. Never really degrades. It lasts for centuries and is now made from a byproduct of fracking. And so plastic should be the bottom of the list.
Did I introduce everybody? Okay, good.
Sorry, Joe.
Who are you?
You know,
I
do want to, you know, first of all, thank you for pointing out what's happening in Troy. But I also think that this week reflects, you know, perhaps the most interesting dynamic right now that we're experiencing in our country, where you have our federal government led by this president, who just decides, you know, this week that they're going to no longer press the energy companies, the light bulb manufacturers, who have been doing an amazing job,
for decades now
of producing the most efficient, you know, bulbs that last longer and provide great lighting.
And save us money.
So here we are with the president who's going back and taking us to a bygone era where you could basically, you know, use whatever kind of light bulbs you want. But you have the federal government going in one direction. You have local governments who are moving yet in the direction that we all want. And that's what I think we have to get used to moving forward.
It'll be interesting to see if the companies actually begin manufacturing these outdated, outmoded, useless bulbs anymore.
You know what's interesting about that is the fact that, you know, here you have this person, right, this president, who continues to do the things that he's doing, whether it's light bulbs or fuel efficiency, right?
Of course.
But the fact of the matter is, as consumers, we really dictate to the corporations what we want.
Exactly.
And I think what consumers want are efficient light bulbs. We want efficient fuel, electronic cars. That's what the consumers want. And as long as that's what consumers want, that's the direction that the corporations will have to move.
But the fossil fuel industry doesn't want more efficiency. They want to sell more fossil fuels. And we can vote with our pocketbooks, but most people don't buy electric cars or hybrid cars. That's a small percentage, and that's why we need regulations and laws on the books to push it in a certain direction, and that's what the president is repealing. This is all about pleasing the fossil fuel industry, because as you point out, the companies that make the lighting fixtures, they're fine with tighter efficiency standards. They're not asking for it to be rolled back, but you know, Shell, Exxon, Mobil, they all are.
So what's the pressure now that the president has allowed this? Shell and Exxon and all of those will do what?
Well,
to push their lousy light bulbs.
But I mean, I love what they did in California about cars. So they're driving the car industry to actually change because they've said we're only going to accept this type of car in California, and that's a big. So consumers have more power collectively. I mean, individually picking up paper and things like that is a wonderful thing to do. It's a great thing to teach kids. But collectively, if we come together and compel state government to do certain things, we can actually affect change.
Final point, then we'll return the show to Joe.
But I thought it was like Freeform Friday or something. I don't know.
The New York Times this morning reports that the Trump administration is going to try to block California from doing the cleaner California car standards, which 12 states go along with.
Well, good. Joe, he'll be out of office before that even comes to... to a courthouse.
Hope you're right. Joe, I liked last Friday being Methane Friday.
Yeah, Methane Friday. And, well, let me just say, as we talk about all this, I mean, the obvious, we'll talk about the economy and we'll talk about jobs. The report out this morning is that there have been jobs added, but the word being used is, I believe, tepid. Is that correct? 130,000 jobs added in the month of August. Mm-hmm. And the report, again, what I saw was the word tepid, although yesterday in the president's tweet he said great job numbers. So I don't know what to believe, Aaron. Please help me.
Well, everything's great in his mind. So, yeah, it was 130,000 jobs added in August, but 25,000 of those were temporary census workers for the 2020 census. So it was actually a gain of 105,000 jobs in the non-farm sector. So that's down from 159,000 in July and down from 165,000 for the 2019 average. So it's definitely weak.
But it was it not? Sorry, I'm just asking. Was it not higher than had been expected? Or
no, the forecast was 160,000 jobs, so it's substantially lower than that.
Okay.
You can change. You can turn that into 13 million with a cup with a Sharpie, man.
Yeah.
You're going to change the forecast. You may as well
million.
Just add a couple zeros there.
Yeah, I think Trump was responding to the ADP employment. Report which comes out the Thursday prior to the jobs report.
Right.
So,
the Sharpie company has got to be loving all
yes.
this.
Yes,
oh yeah.
I want to see their advertisement.
You can change the world with a Sharpie,
and even the weather patterns.
You can change the weather.
Wow,
yes.
We're going to get letters saying that the Sharpie's not the. It's just a distraction. No, it is not. It's proof that he is unfit for office.
You can also get high on Sharpie. Smell.
Yeah, you know that advertising campaign is just writes itself, doesn't
yeah.
it?
So the thing with the unemployment report is that unemployment is a lagging indicator, meaning it doesn't tell you where the economy's headed. It tells you where the economy's been. And the reason for that is because before laying off workers, firms will usually reduce worker hours before they actually cut workers. So if you look at the average weekly hours, that paints a much more tepid picture, a much weaker picture of the labor market. It went down last month. It was pretty much steady now. The manufacturing sector contracted for the first time in 3 years this past month. So a lot of the leading indicators, which is manufacturing activity and hours, are telling a story that the economy is definitely heading onto a slower growth path. So you're starting to see the trade war, the uncertainty about Brexit and what its global implications can be, the slowdown in Germany and Japan, the slowdown in China, all starting to kind of coalesce and manifest itself in a way that's not going to lead to an immediate recession. There's not going to be a crash. It's going to be, kind of a slow road to leading into a recession.
So I have a question for you following up on that because it's important to me, and that is, should I and should everybody who has a 401k, based on what you just said,
You have to ask Hugh Johnson that. I am not a certified financial advisor.
Well, but you obviously you are pointing to the fact that we're going to have a slowdown. We may even have a recession, although a lot of people deny that. So the question is, because you're the closest thing to an expert we have here, what should we do to preserve our retirement?
Alan, I've just taken my Sharpie and I've now changed Aaron's curriculum vitae. So yeah. You are now officially a
just ask him, Alan, what he tells his mommy and daddy.
Yeah, what do you tell your mommy and daddy?
There's going to be some turbulence ahead over the next year, next 2 years.
It
depends on your risk tolerance. If you want to roll the dice, there's a good potential that, the stock market might go up. I mean, the stock market rebounded when Trump said he was going to restart trade negotiations with China.
Which actually was not true.
Yeah, I was going to say, next week he can back down and send out a tweet that says, oh, nope, negotiations are off.
And that's what's so frightening. I mean, that's what's so frightening about all of this. As soon as his numbers start to go down,
right,
he invokes China. The Chinese, even in some of these cases, although not last week, say it's not true. And the market goes up. That's frightening, I think.
Yeah.
But that's always how it goes. The market listens to what's the headlines. It's always very speculative. And he plays that way. And trouble is he's going over the edge now to the point where he won't be able to do something that will correct the problem.
What do you mean? I'm sorry. What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by what?
He won't be able to do something that will correct the problem.
He's going back and forth with China, and we're at how many billions of tariffs right now. And at a certain point where China goes, okay, that's fine, they're not going to go, okay, that's fine, we're going to correct again. He's gone past the edge. There's a big story about that in the New York Times today, talking about how it's just too far at this point. It's not going to be a back and forth anymore. It's going to be serious ramifications for us.
Yeah,
but his base doesn't give a damn. Right.
Well, his
base
is giving a damn now because they've lost markets. I mean, if you're talking about the central part of our country that is accustomed to exporting soybeans and other vegetables to China as well as other countries, they now understand. I think the question then now becomes: Are the moms who are going out and dads who are going out and buying Nike sneakers for their kids for going back to school, are they going to begin to understand?
And so when you see the polling, and when you see the polling that shows that the farmers are turning on Trump, let me know. Because
we don't have polls of farmers. You just see these little snippets of like man and woman on the street interviews, and it's mixed.
But it's not just that. I mean, it's not just the putting a camera, a microphone in front of a farmer's mouth. It's all of the bankruptcies.
Sure. Right. The suicide.
All right, we have 10 seconds.
You have falling agriculture incomes, rising delinquency rates, increasing foreclosures.
You know what else we have?
What?
A break.
Okay.
We'll be right back right after this. The 6th of September, and welcome back to the Roundtable, 9:33 in the morning, and we welcome you. We have an amazing panel this morning: Alan Shartok, Susie Schultz, Rosemary Armeo, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, and last but certainly not least, Judith Enck. We welcome you to get in on it and write us a letter, panel@wamc.org. I have several in my hand. Let me read them. We go to Brandon, who says, you talk about President Trump going back on methane emissions for oil and gas drilling, but what you don't talk about is the largest cause of methane emissions, which is factory farming. The raising of cattle all over the U.S. for meat and dairy production is absolutely ridiculous.
Going after your cheeseburgers, David.
Don't do that, man.
Factory farming is a major source of methane, along with fracking.
So Mark says he has a plastics question for Judith. What's the difference between recyclable and non-recyclable plastics, and what makes non-recyclable plastics non-recyclable?
Well, most plastics historically have not been recycled. It's only 9% recycling rate worldwide. So there are many, many different kinds of plastics. Flip your container over to the bottom and you see tiny little numbers. You should recycle number 1, number 2, and number 5. Everything else, which goes up to 7, is not really recyclable. But we can't recycle our way.
You just let us in on a major code. I mean, I feel like... I just feel like I've learned something amazing today.
Say, on the round table.
Just repeat that
one,
for
two,
me,
and
please.
Five.
1, 2, and 5 put in your recycling bin. All the other plastics do not put in your recycling bin because it contaminates the rest of the recycling load, which is why China has closed its doors.
Susie knew the numbers.
Importing
1, 2, 5.
So from your perspective, Judith, does it make sense to pass a law that says you can only use the ones that are recyclable?
Absolutely. We have to pass a state law. And then don't buy the other plastics because they're either going to be burned at incinerators, polluting the air, wind up in landfills, or be part of the 8 million pounds a year of plastics that go into the ocean.
So the big rumor in my neighborhood colony outside of Albany is that there is no real recycling going on, that all that separation we're doing is baloney, that it just all gets to the landfill and gets dumped in the same place. Is that true?
Sounds like the job for like an investigative reporter.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, right. I know. I mean, in our region, right? Yeah. I mean, that is the case.
Yeah.
Well, that's typically not true. I don't want to discourage source separation in recycling. You do have certain haulers that are not complying with the law, and so perhaps a certain district attorney or a state attorney general's office could look at this, because that is a violation of law.
Add it to your to-do list, sir.
Oh, man, 1, 2, 5. I feel like this is the environmentalist Illuminati over here.
Most source-separated recyclables are recycled, so people
should
keep doing it.
Okay, so the other thing is that we throw newspapers into the recycling thing, and I've heard that that's also bad because they get wet and they just get thrown out anyway.
Well, try not to get it wet. If it is wet, it does get thrown out. But if you
cannot put
it out when it's raining, that would be good. But we moved to single-stream recycling where everything is in one bin. I didn't love that 25 years ago, but here it is. We have strong markets for paper, cardboard, metal, 1, 2, and 5 plastics. Glass has always been a little bit of shaky. Everyone keep recycling.
So what percentage do you think falls into the, into your category of we have strong markets? What percentage of everything that comes through all of our
homes.
Stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, most stuff is not recyclable. So that's why, I mean, my answer is just do everything you can to not buy plastics. But Amazon, for instance, if you order from Amazon, it comes in this plethora of plastic. We got to get them to change. You know, the Troy acting last night was terrific, but it doesn't deal with all the online shopping. So we need laws to change this because the companies are not doing it on their own. They use plastic because it's cheap, and that's all they care about.
Is anybody else feeling shame? Right, I feel like I've just been shamed.
Yeah, but I'm going to go on
you
with
look
the
at me when you
and
look
I tend,
at
I, take
I didn't Amazon. Look at you.
Apple
you at,
products are, I mean, it's beautiful. Their packaging is put into museums for design. But, whoa, there's a lot of wasted material there.
Yeah, well, because there's no economic responsibility for the companies that ship out all this stuff. They're just like, we buy it. They don't have any fiscal responsibility to take it back and recycle and reuse it, which is not the case in Europe, certain Canadian provinces. California is on the verge of passing a really good packaging reduction law. It's called circular economy. It'll be interesting if it gets through the legislature and whether New York, Massachusetts, other places would consider it.
When you open an Apple product in my house, it's like a ceremony. I mean, that's how beautiful the packaging is.
Do you have that music?
But yeah. So today you've attacked my cheeseburger.
No, but wait a minute. To be totally fair to Apple, the majority of it is cardboard. It's done in different ways, but the majority of it is cardboard when you think about it. It's not these plastic. There's plastic.
They've changed. Yeah. The former EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson, who's amazing, went to Apple a few years ago, and she got them because she was in a position of influence to really reduce plastic shipping.
Yeah. I don't throw it out anyway. I feel like it's throwing away art. I have boxes in my storage room.
I do too. Yeah.
So your children will throw them away.
I throw the computers away, but I still have the packaging. One
last thing, Joe. Would you, or Rosemary, would you reintroduce the guest? Because there's a voice that a lot of people don't know yet.
It's a good one.
It's Susie Schultz, Executive Director of the Museum of Broadcast Communications and a longtime investigative journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times.
That's me.
Cool.
Anne writes and says, I agree with Judith and Elizabeth about the fossil fuel industry's responsibility for the climate problem, but every time you use a plastic container, bag, and straw, you are supporting the fossil fuel industry. I choose not to support them as little as possible by choosing alternatives.
Like pants with a lot of pockets.
Peter writes, as reported in many reliable sources, the meat and dairy industry surpass all others, including oil and gas, as the greatest polluters, and they use incredible amounts of fresh water. Also foolish to create any new medical plan if the basics for health, clean air, and water are not completed as a foundation. Jay writes, there is a huge plastic plant being built in Pennsylvania that will produce virgin plastics because it's cheaper to do virgin plastics than it is to recycle the old stuff. Tell me I'm only having a bad dream.
This is absolutely true. There are dozens of these facilities proposed all over Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Louisiana, Texas, and Ohio. The first one is under construction in Pennsylvania. These facilities are called ethylene cracker plants. And what they do is they take the byproduct of fracking.
They're trying to get away from virgin, are they?
They take the byproduct from...
I feel like this is like, is it an environmentalist dozens game? They're cracking each other at each other, you know?
All right. Could do environmental bingo.
Oh, that's crazy.
We are now linked to fracking if you, buy a lot of plastic. So you take the byproduct of fracking, which is ethane, you send it by pipeline to these new facilities called ethylene cracker plants. They are being built by little mom-and-pop companies like Shell, BP, Exxon, and they exist just to create single-use plastic packaging, which will bring the cost of that packaging cheaper than it is today. Massive amounts of carbon will be emitted. For instance, a new report from the Center for International Environmental Law says that if these facilities are built by 2030, the carbon emissions will be the equivalent of 295 new 500 megawatt coal-fired power plants.
Gosh.
So as we're shutting down coal plants and investing in clean, renewable energy, energy efficiency, the fossil fuel industry is now shifting their massive financial investments to more virgin plastic production.
Wow.
And of course, these facilities always are cited in low-income communities of color. Massive amount of carbon, but also lots of air toxins, particularly benzene, coming out of the stacks of these places.
But the jobs, Judith, how many jobs are we getting out of this?
Not many. Lots of construction jobs, but I think this multi-billion dollar investment, which is heavily subsidized by the state of Pennsylvania and federal taxpayers, roughly 150 jobs.
Oh, God.
Permanent jobs, but a lot of construction jobs. This is the plant that President Trump went to three Tuesdays ago. Remember, the union employees were told, show up or you don't get paid. And the president was there promoting more plastic production.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and we'll finish up. And then the governor will be on with Alan coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. We'll be right back after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Arimeo, Susie Schultz, Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, and Judith Enk. We welcome you, panel. Well, what?
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
to celebrate your anniversary.
It's the crowded table today.
Right. We got 49 people around the table.
And someone decided to cut us short today.
Wow. Cheap shot.
Paddle at WAMC.org.
That was the district attorney.
And Governor, that's David Soares who said that.
As I understand, you two are very close. It should work out fine.
We're Thunder Buddies.
All right. Markets soar, progress, hopes low. This is news of China talks. The market soar as a result, but hopes for progress are low. That's the headline in the New York Times. President Trump's decision to renew talks with China in the coming weeks on financial markets soaring on Thursday as investors seized on the development is a sign that both sides could still find a way out of an economically damaging trade war. I think this is the article you were referring to earlier, Susie. The rally sent the S&P 500 up more than 1%, underscoring just how much financial markets are subsisting on hopes and fears about the trade war. Shares fell through most of August as the president escalated his fight with China and imposed more tariffs, only to snap back on Thursday after news of the talks.
I just don't buy it. The talks have been on, off, on, off. He called Xi Jinping an enemy of the United States. I mean, both sides have taken such a hardline stance that even if they do come to the table, it's real tough to see any type of satisfactory resolution.
So you're trying to say the president said it and you don't believe it?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I think part of the problem is part of the problem too is now the politics are baked in for both of these leaders in their country, where the Trump's base wants him to continue to appear tough and continue to take this stance, and of course the president of China's suffering and experiencing from the same thing. The only difference being when you have a 4-year term and the other person has no term limits, I think we can see who's going to win there. The other thing about China that we should be mindful of is the fact that over the course of the last, I'd say, 8 to 10 years, they have really begun to engage in greater diplomacy and taking up some of those spaces that we've abandoned. They're the country that's now building roads in various countries in Africa.
And Latin America,
And Latin America.
Our own sphere of influence they've moved into big time.
Exactly. And so
Manhattan.
and so, China's had a plan. They're executing it to perfection. They could not have foreseen the United States electing a buffoon, and a buffoon that would, in
help
a much shorter
effort.
Time, would help that effort. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. He is the best friend of Mr. Xi, and I think he knows that, and he's played it all along. Yes, yes, I'm your buddy. Do you want to go to Mar-a-Lago again?
Yeah.
Bad.
We have letters. Clarence writes, I am aware of so many people working 2 to 3 jobs to support a family. Does the jobs added per month count one individual 2 to 3 times, thereby making the jobs per month number higher?
They have a separate category for multiple job holders, but I believe that you just have to have one. If you just have one job, you're counted in the employment statistics.
Roger is writing to Judith about plastics. Your comment about only a recycling 1, 2, and 5 number of plastics is interesting. Our town of Pleasant Valley updated the town website to indicate all numbered plastics can be included.
Yeah, so they should correct that. Haulers and towns have been saying that for years because they...
Dear Pleasant Valley, Judith says...
I have some unpleasant news. local governments think you just want to make it as easy as possible for people, so you throw it all in, and then when it gets to the recycling center, they separate it. But that's all very labor-intensive. Mm-hmm. And local government should come clean and say 1, 2, and 5, and then don't buy the other number of plastics. Look for alternatives. There are many.
Tom says the proposal to regulate access to Sharpies violates my First Amendment rights. Sharpies don't change weather maps. People do.
letter of the day.
One person does.
That's great.
Mary Jo says, are soft plastic bags and film recyclable?
Film is not. You can bring plastic bags to voluntary bins in many supermarkets. I'm highly suspicious that most of them don't get recycled. So use reusable bags.
Should have a recycling box.
Why are you suspicious of that?
The markets are not strong.
It's not bad.
And also when you look in those bins, which I often do for fun, there's all this other
crap.
Talks about investigative journalism doing this. So for about, I think it was 6 months, my husband and I, when we had kids, we did everything we could to live green. We put and we put all the garbage that we saved, all the recycling, in the basement in this area. So at the end, we could weigh it and we could decide what was going on.
And as
I followed this stuff back, this was the problem. I knew where to take batteries because this place did this. And so one day when I went there, and I'm feeling so righteous, right? One day I go there, and this was another worker that I didn't know. I introduced myself, and I said, so what do you do with them? He goes, oh, we just throw them in the garbage. And they have a whole program for battery
recycling.
That's
the rumors I was telling you about. And people are very suspicious of recycling.
Yeah, well, you've got to ask, and then you have to follow, and we need reporters to cover it. Albany Times Union had an amazing environmental reporter years ago, Dina Capiello. She then moved to Washington, D.C. She followed the trucks around at like 4 a.m. in the morning. You know, when you source separated, where did it really go? And County Waste, which is now owned by Waste Connections, that owns the horrible, polluting construction and demolition debris landfill in Rensselaer, New York, but Dunn Landfill, but that's another show. County Waste was
a lot of adjectives in that, but go ahead.
Well, you know, I mean,
County Waste was fined a lot of money for not recycling the source separated. Sorry, David.
When you become an environmentalist, there's a lot of villains, man. I'm sitting here like, we got to go get this dude too.
I think we need to talk later, David. Investigative reporting and a prosecutor, and we'll take care of this, Judith.
Thank you.
For you.
Knocking on doors. Is this number 1, 2, and 5?
The upshot of my story, though, was the fact that we saved so much stuff out of landfill, pounds and pounds and pounds and pounds and pounds, papers and papers and papers, and we put them to the places where we knew, because I was able to find them, they actually did it all the way.
Oh, we should be friends. This is very exciting.
That's what we do here on the roundtable. We'll try to bring people together. Yes. Allison writes, I think education on the recycling is lacking. When I try to figure out why my recycling wasn't picked up, it is a total puzzle. Also, we live in a world where an email is required for everything, followed by magazine offers and other advertisements in my mailbox. I also think we often gloss over the expense of sustainable, environmentally friendly products. I try when I can, but it gets pricey pretty quick.
Well, our parents and grandparents practiced a lot of these behaviors, and it wasn't expensive, like, you know, saving jars and refilling them, composting in your backyard. I mean, organic food is often more expensive, although the price is coming down. And we don't want that to happen with non-plastic products. We don't want it to be the organic food phenomena that only, you know, twice the price or something like that. But it's supply and demand.
My mom. If she could have just, we could have capitalized and we'd be owning the Tupperware companies, right? Yep. You remember the shed spread butter tub?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We had how many of those in a cabinet?
Oh,
yeah, my mother.
God. My mom would never throw that away.
No.
You would have to like open the lid to every one of them in the fridge to find out where's the food you really want to reheat, you know?
With my mother, it's coffee cans. There are 40 of them in the refrigerator. I have no idea. I'm afraid to look at some of them.
I can't even go to the supermarket and look at a shed spread cut by the time. Because it's like, no, don't even know what's in there.
The wisdom of our parents. Oh, they lived through the Depression. And I'm not saying we need a Depression
Make America
mindset,
great again.
But,
that's,
you know, it's
like
kind of basic stuff. I mean, Whole Foods, if you can afford to shop their whole paycheck, they had a display out in front of their avocados looking for an alternative to plastic, and they had paper bags.
So I just want to jump in. Did another story where we did Aldi's, we did Whole Foods, we did Trader Joe's, we did whatever, compared the prices, and the whole paycheck thing, yes, there's a whole bunch of things that you can go crazy on, but their brands are actually, some of them are the lower prices at Whole Foods. So, so again, the whole paycheck thing doesn't always check out.
It depends how much time you have. Like, I just do the sales and the brands, but that's an extra stop. I'm revealing too much.
Are you two not friends now?
No, they're still Thunder Buddies.
Okay. All right, good. Hurricane Dorian makes landfall on North Carolina's Outer Banks. The storm landed on Cape Hatteras with winds of 90 miles per hour. The storm wreaked catastrophe in the Bahamas, killing at least 30 people. So far in the southeastern United States, at least 4 have died. And, you know, we've been watching the storm for, a week and a half now, and it continues to
I'm amazed at how slow it has been getting information about what the storm has done. We get the deaths, but the shoreline from the Bahamas on up now into North Carolina has been ripped. How much erosion was there? How many buildings lost? Amazing that we don't know this.
Well, the Bahamas, human tragedy story is just going to get worse as reporters get in there. I mean, those numbers are very low. The people that got off of Abaco Island are just horrendous stories. And it raises the issue. There are some places you should not rebuild because intense hurricanes are our future. The warmer ocean water temperature makes the hurricanes more intense. It's like rocket fuel. The Category 2 hurricane becomes the Category 5 hurricane. And you've got sea level rise. So the storm surge is more significant. More people die in hurricanes from flooding than from all the winds. But we've got to really, think about, elected officials don't like to talk about this, but you can't rebuild in some of these places.
And that's what's so disappointing about the entire Sharpie issue, is that really taken away from the coverage of the most important thing right now, which is the devastation that the hurricane has left. Because the hurricane is going to come in and lives will be lost for sure.
Yeah.
But then immediately thereafter, it is important that you have, that kind of response, because you're saving lives now. Every single minute, every single day that goes by without some ship landing, or anchoring down, close to those islands, people are going to die.
Yeah, we saw that in Puerto Rico. It's not as if we don't know what's going to happen. Susie and I were talking about the media's role in this, too, both in gun shootouts and in disasters like this. The coverage has a certain sameness. There's a set of stories that you do, and they're not enough anymore.
They're not enough.
You have to do more, like call on people to say, what are you doing about this? This has happened. This is the fourth Category 5 storm we've had in 4 years. What are you going to do for next year?
I agree with your point, right? When we're talking about mass shootings, we're talking about gun violence. Right? The only time you hear about it is when there is a mass shooting, right? You don't even hear about those shootings that take place in inner cities.
Every
single day, we are losing more and more young people.
Well, except when the president blasts Chicago's death rate.
Yes.
Thank you, Mayor Lightfoot.
But that's happening everywhere. Right, that's happening
in
every city.
Of course, Baltimore, New York.
Right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But we don't pay enough attention to it, and you don't hear, gun violence being articulated from people in community.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Coming up next will be Alan Chartok speaking to the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. My thanks to Alan, also to Judith Enk, David Soares, Aaron Pacitti. What? I got her.
Okay.
Okay. No.
I think that he's misgesturing to
me. Yeah. Rosemary Armijo and Susie Schultz, thank you so much. How nice to have you here.
It was a pleasure.
Recycler extraordinaire.
Executive director of the Museum of Broadcast Communications, which is a wonderful museum. Are you still located? Where are you located?
We are located at 360 North State Street. So right next to the Marina City Towers. We moved from the Cultural Center.
Yeah, because you used to be right across the Art Museum, right?
Correct.
Yes. Cool. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank
what
you.
A great pleasure.